Follow Mooney Goes Wild on Twitter
at NatureRTE.
Now, there are an estimated 10,000 different bird species in the world, and one of the most fascinating of all has to be the Arctic tern. Nicknamed the sea swallow, this small bird, which weighs no more than a lemon, is the world's greatest long-distance traveller, migrating further than any other animal. Over the course of their lives, they can journey more than 3 million kilometres, the equivalent of almost 4 round trips to the moon.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Unfortunately, the future for this small bird is uncertain. Their conservation status in Ireland is amber, meaning that although they are not considered on the verge of extinction, they are vulnerable. 90% of the Irish population of Arctic terns is concentrated at 10 or fewer sites. So it's especially good news that for the first time on record this year, Arctic terns have successfully raised chicks on three islands off the coast of Dalkey in South County Dublin, giving this vulnerable colony a much-needed lift. Tara Adcock is Birdwatch Ireland's Dalkey Tern Warden, and she joins us in the studio now. You're very welcome. Tara, say hello to Richard Naina. Say hello to Tara. Everybody make friends.
Hello, Tara.
Don't be shy.
How's it going?
You're the gull and tern specialist in Birdwatch now, are you?
No, I think that title belongs to a few other people.
Oh, but
but you've been working on the mountain Dalkey.
Yes, I have been.
So good news, good news. Tell us all about it.
So basically the Dalkey Tern Conservation Project actually began as a volunteer project back in 1995, and basically the South Dublin Birdwatch Ireland branch and some members of Birdwatch Ireland staff were really enthralled with the fact that roseate terns were nesting on Maiden Rock, which is an island just north of Dalkey Island. So they began a monitoring effort out there and putting out nest boxes for the roseate terns to try and keep them safe. Between 1997 and 1999, they were lucky enough to get funding from the EU Interreg. And then that funding ran out, and again it was volunteer led until 2016, when we were lucky enough to get funding from the EU Life Roseate Tern Recovery Project and Dunleary Rattan County Council, and we're now in the fourth year of a 5-year funding programme.
Why does the money matter to the birds breeding or not?
It doesn't.
Or is that a silly question?
No, it's not at all. It doesn't matter to the birds breeding, but it matters to our efforts to manage that colony. So without the money, we wouldn't have been able to carry out rat control. We just simply wouldn't have been able to afford the bait or the pipes. We wouldn't have a warden out there part-time being able to check on the species and stuff. So it would have been volunteer-led, which would have been amazing, but maybe a little bit more sporadic, whereas having somebody dedicated and out there at least twice a week checking on the colony means that the data collected, it's not that it's better or anything, it's just that
it enabled you to do the work you wish to do in order to conserve the species.
Exactly, yes.
Okay,
yes.
But you were talking about roseate terns, and we introduced the whole thing as speaking about the Arctic terns.
Yeah,
so what's the connection between the roseates and the Arctic? Because the roseates, as far as I was aware, are much rarer species.
They are. So they're actually amber listed as well in Ireland, but across Europe they are a red listed species. So
there's the roseate.
The roseate terns. Yeah. So that means that they are a species which is on the verge of extinction in Europe, but in Ireland their population is considered vulnerable. And the reason that the roseate tern population is considered vulnerable in Ireland is because there is a lack of available breeding habitat. And this is something that we're seeing with the Arctic terns as well and common terns. So the connection of the Dalkey Tern Conservation Project to the roseate tern is A, that we've had them breeding on Maiden Rock previously, so we know that they do like to breed there, but it kind of all comes back to Rockaville. So Rockaville Island, which is managed by Birdwatch Ireland, is
just on the north side of Dublin.
Exactly. So it's off the coast of Skerries in North County Dublin, about 6 kilometres off the coast of Skerries. It has about 80% of northwestern Europe's breeding population of roseate terns on it. And it's this amazing success story. So in 1989, there were 152 breeding pairs of roseate terns on Rockaville Island. Now, as of last year, there are over 1,600 breeding pairs of roseate terns, and that's thanks to intensive management by Birdwatch Ireland. Mm-hmm. Literally, and when I say intensive, I mean intensive. So they have wardens marooned out there for 3 months to 4 months of the year.
During the breeding season.
Keeping away predators, checking on the nests, censusing, and they're censusing the common terns, the Arctic terns that are out there as well as the guillemots and the kittiwakes. So this has wide-reaching ecological benefits to other species as well. So, while Rockaville is such an amazing success story, it also is kind of, it's akin to having all of your eggs in one basket. Having that proportion of Europe's population of rosy terns breeding at one site means that they're very vulnerable to things like oil spills, God forbid, or a couple of successive bad breeding seasons. If this happens, it could have long-term and devastating impacts for
so
the European population.
So kind of all the eggs are in one basket.
Exactly, exactly. So what we're trying to do, and this is where Dalkey and a few other sites come in, what we're trying to do is diversify the available breeding habitat for roseate terns. And that's why the eLife Roseate Tern Recovery Project is interested in Dalkey Island as well as seven other sites across Ireland and the UK.
So back to the Arctic Tern.
Yes, so coming back to the Arctic Tern. So what we're doing is the Dalkey Tern Conservation Project, the aim of it is to create and sustain safe breeding habitat for the Arctic tern, the roseate tern and the common tern, with a particular emphasis on the roseate tern. So our particular emphasis is that we want to get them to breed on the island, but in the meantime we're also looking after the Arctic tern colony that's there, and in past years the common terns that were also part of that colony.
Because terns all breed together, don't
exactly.
they?
Exactly.
It's not like just if you have Arctic and if nothing else.
Exactly.
Yeah, once you have one lot, there seems to be safety in numbers for those particular birds.
Yes, that's it, exactly. So the roseate tern essentially is quite timid compared to the common and Arctic tern. And like you said, they like to nest together. So strength in numbers. What they do, essentially, their whole strategy is to have loads and loads of them there so that if a predator comes in, they can mob it. So they all rise up off the nest and start mobbing.
These are ground nesting birds. Just for the benefit of our listeners who may not be too familiar, they're nesting on the ground. Just describe the nest.
Okay. So it's not a nest like you traditionally think of a nest. It's basically just a scrape in the ground. So it's just a hollow in the ground and they lay their eggs on top of that. So, and these eggs are camouflaged. So it's called disruptive coloration. Essentially, it's like khaki. And when you're walking around, you mightn't see it underfoot. So that's why it's really important that people aren't walking across these seabird colonies as well. But yeah, so that's what it looks like. And sometimes they decorate it with like little shells and stuff like that. We're not quite sure why they do it. But that's what a tern nest looks like. And they'll lay between one and three eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They only lay one clutch per year. Unless they lose it early enough in the season and then they can relay. So the kind of rule of thumb is if they lose their nest before the summer solstice, they can relay again. Just to give you an idea of what these terns actually look like, so we're not just using the terms. So all three species actually look remarkably similar and they're really, really beautiful seabirds. Like it was said in the opening, they weigh about the same as a lemon, so about 100 grams. An Arctic tern is white with grey wings. It has a black cap and during the breeding season has a blood red bill and has these little short blood red legs as well, which gives a kind of a dumpy appearance when it's standing and has quite long tail. So when it's standing, it has kind of this long, elegant look to it compared to the common tern. So the common tern looks remarkably similar to the Arctic tern, really difficult to tell apart at a distance. But a common tern again has that black calf, the grey wings and the white body. It has slightly longer red legs than the Arctic tern, but during the breeding season it has an orange bill with a black tip on it. And it has a shorter tail. So when they're standing, the common tern looks a little bit squatter or a little bit shorter than the Arctic tern. When we're talking about tails, though, the roseate tern definitely wins. So the roseate tern has this beautiful, long, elegant tail. They are much whiter overall in appearance. During the breeding season, they have a black bill and they also have this kind of pink blush across their breast feathers. That's absolutely gorgeous. The three species are kind of nicknamed sea swallows, but it's really nice because if you look at the Latin name for common terns, it's actually Sterna hirundo. And hirundo is the Latin name for swallows and martins.
Yeah,
so that kind of pet name is built into their Latin name, which is lovely. So yeah, so that's the three species. You'll typically see them kind of over the sea, plunge diving. So the way that they feed is they feed by sight. And they'll be kind of hovering over the sea. They see the sand eels and sprat. These are small fish that they feed on. And they see the shoals of them glinting in the sun. They just dive down, grab them out of the sea and go back to
and happy days.
And happy days.
So now the excitement when the first chicks were discovered, who discovered them? I mean, was it just one nest or were they in many nests? Just before we let Richard in, could you tell us about that?
Yeah, of course. So no, we had one nest for ages.
Where are we talking about now? Dalkey Island itself? Or because Dalkey Island is a biggish island. I mean, the Maidens is only a rock and Muglins is only a rock. We used to dive there and go and there's hardly anything there. But Dalkey is quite a big island. There's goats on it, there's rabbits on it, there's a tower on it. I mean, it's a couple of hectares. Yeah, it's 11.6. People go out there on a trip. So there hadn't been any terns breeding on that in the last while. They nested, but they had no success because they were eaten by rats.
Yeah.
That's the bad news. Yeah.
I'll give you the bad news first. So just to give you kind of an idea of the Dalkey Islands. So Dalkey Island, like you're saying, it's really big. It's just over 11 hectares anyway. And it has the Martello Tower, it has the goats, it has rabbits. Just north of that is Lamb Island, which is a smaller vegetated island and has kind of a flat top. And this is traditionally where the Arctic terns have been breeding. Just north of Lamb Island, again, is this kind of small granite island. It's very low-lying, very susceptible to sea surges and stuff like that. And this traditionally was a stronghold for the tern colony on the Dalkey Islands.
That's the Maiden one.
That's the Maiden Rock, yeah. And it was typically common terns that we had out there, while the Arctic terns were on Lamb Island, like I was saying. And we always did have a handful of brave Arctic tern souls out on Dalkey Island doing their best out there, but they just never made it on Dalkey Island. So this year, one of the reasons we're really excited is because they made it on Dalkey Island. But another reason is that we've actually had a few successive poor breeding seasons on the Dalkey Islands over the last years. So just to put it into context, in 2017, there are around 128 breeding pairs across all three islands. And due to a combination of events, so a storm surge on Maiden Rock, like I was saying, it's really low-lying. It just washed the eggs and the chicks off of it. And then on Lamb Island, there was a huge predation event over a weekend. Not 100% certain what happened. Think maybe either rats or gulls, possibly just rats. And out of those 128 pairs, I got 4 fledglings, which is quite poor. And that 128 pairs as well had created this huge amount of excitement because it was the most number of pairs ever seen on Dalkey Island, ever recorded there. But unfortunately, it just didn't work out. Last year, we had 33 pairs of terns, so both Arctic and common terns last year. Unfortunately, due to predation, we didn't get any fledglings at all across all three islands. This year, we had 29 pairs in total, and we managed to get 20 chicks. So that's 13 chicks from Lamb Island and 7 chicks from Dalkey Island itself. And these are the first ever fledglings to take flight from Dalkey Island, which is incredible. And we were there, maybe not for its maiden voyage, but we were there when it was flying around us.
And these were Arctic terns.
Everything on the colony this year seemed to be Arctic terns. We did see a common tern pair on Maiden Rock at the start of the summer, but either they just decided not to breed there or they're just prospecting and feeding there.
And that's because you reckon of the good management practices you have in place on these islands.
Well, because you got rid of the rats.
The fledglings.
So that's good then. So back to the original thing you were saying. Yeah. Richard.
Yes, Tara, you introduced a most interesting proposition there in the middle of your excellent talk. And it is this kind of a suggestion that the Arctic is the paramilitary wing of the tern colony. The Arctics are the most aggressive. If you go to a tern colony and something hits you on the head and you find yourself bleeding, it will generally be an Arctic tern. They are the most aggressive things. They will attack foxes. They will even drive away polar bears. Now, but that's a bit odd in a way, because if they're that aggressive, how did predators get at the chicks and the eggs in Dalkey? I mean, if the Arctic's not doing their job, are they getting soft or something like that?
Well, yeah, it's actually a really interesting point, because we've noticed this year that the terns are a lot feistier than they were in previous years. But the other thing is the type of predators that we had out there. So seabirds have evolved to nest on cliff faces and islands, because these areas are traditionally free of rodents and mammalian predators. So basically what they've evolved to do is to attack anything coming in from the air. So things like gulls, which are actually a natural part of the ecosystem. They play an essential role in a seabird ecosystem and in our natural ecosystem. But they haven't evolved defences against things like rats running in across the island and taking the nest. They're pretty much defences against anything that's on the ground. So having knocked back the population of rats on Dalkey Island and gotten rid of it completely on Lamb Island, it's just given them that chance to raise their young.
How did you get rid of the rats?
So
Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Yeah, so we used poison. It was called Contract TM. And I know poisoning is a really emotive issue, but genuinely, if it's done in a really safe and responsible way.
And you had obviously properly qualified pest control technicians. You didn't just run out to a shop and stuff it down everywhere yourselves.
So there's special
licenses and techniques for doing this. So where did you put the poison? All over the ground?
Where did you put the rats when they were dead?
No, hang on. Because it's all of a story, isn't it? So where did you put the poison in the first place?
Yeah, well, maybe just going back to the experienced technicians, just to give kind of a shout out. So we had Michael Lachlan, who helped us out a great deal, and we really appreciate that. And Karen Varnum of the RSPB as well. And we couldn't have done it without their help. But about where we put the poison. Islands. So essentially we laid out a 50 metre by 50 metre grid across Dalkey Island and Lamb Island, and the poison was placed into these bait stations. So they're 75 centimetres in length, yellow in colour for the most part, except for six that weren't, that were black. And they had these stakes going through the ends of them just to make the entrances smaller so that other species, such as rabbits, couldn't get in and access the bait. And they were kind of placed along, say, like if there was a rock face, because rats kind of like to go along things where they're safe. So you place it along like a rock face or down in kind of a hollow and stuff like that. So that's how we laid it out.
And then the rats came along and ate it, but it doesn't make them drop dead at once. And that's the second bit of the jigsaw, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a slow-acting bait, so it's an anticoagulant.
Essentially, it just bleeds to death internally.
Yeah, which isn't, I mean, it isn't particularly nice, but there are really sound ecological reasons for doing it this way, and there's a lot of welfare reasons for doing it this way on a wider context. So it takes 3 days for the poison to act, which means that the animal, the rat, would feel ill and it would take to ground. So it goes down into its burrow where it's completely out of the way of any other species that might eat it, such as gulls. The other thing to remember on the Dalkey Islands is that aside from rats, rabbits and goats, there were no other mammals. So we don't have foxes who might go down and dig them up and eat them or anything like that. So they weren't a risk to any other mammals.
So no danger of secondary poisoning.
Exactly. And the main bird of prey around the Dalkey Islands is the peregrine falcon, but it hunts on the wing.
And so it catches birds.
Exactly.
It doesn't catch rats. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. As we found out, because we got camera footage of one taken down an Arctic tern.
The brat.
Yeah. So no danger to them whatsoever as well. So what we did is we laid the grid in October. We let it weather in. And the reason that we did this, the reason we left it until January before we started baiting, was that rats are highly neophobic. It's one of the things that makes them really successful.
That means they don't like new things. So
exactly.
They will, you put down the pipe, they run a mile and say, what's that? And not go near it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it means they're really wary of novel objects. So essentially, once we laid that down, they got used to the bait stations. But when we put in the bait, it meant that they would take the bait up much, much faster. And the success of the project would be much faster as well.
And they're all gone. No rats on Dalkey this year.
There's no rats on Lamb Island. At the end of it, we looked at all our data and kind of bait take and stuff, and it looked like there were still rats on Dalkey Island based on these things. So we were monitoring for the presence of rats using wax blocks. Essentially, it looks like a tea cake. We flavour it with chocolate and with coconut. It's just made out of wax, flavoured with chocolate and coconut. And it smells delicious. I found my brother like nearly eating one day before he realised what it was. But they're completely non-toxic. There's no poison in them whatsoever. And what we do is we put them down beside the bait stations and in between each bait station. We can check for the presence or absence of rats using their teeth marks on it. So at the end of it, we were still finding teeth marks on these monitoring blocks, and we thought, oh no, we haven't gotten rid of them completely. But the fact that we've got these Arctic tern chicks off of Dalkey Island for the first time ever means that we have seriously knocked back.
Significantly reduced the numbers.
Yeah.
And do you think you'll ever be able to eradicate them totally from the island?
I hope so. We're going to go back this year again and do it again.
But rats can swim, and Dalkey Island isn't far enough away.
Yeah.
No, they can. They can swim a mile. They can swim a kilometre.
Yeah. I mean, the
island isn't that far.
Yeah, the island isn't far enough away for that they could be recolonised. But they won't come out if there's no food for them. And the food is only the terns. The rest of the year there's not much to eat. No, but I mean, in the wintertime or in springtime, it's only when the seabirds are nesting that there's food for the rats.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they could recolonise and maybe we'll never completely knock them back, but completely get rid of them. I'm not sure.
Have you considered laying traps, laying bait on the mainland itself then in that case? In Dalkey Harbour?
There is some talk about that, but we need to consult with Dunleary and County Harbour, County Council.
Because if they're swimming across there, stop them from going in the first place.
Yeah, revoke
their passports.
Wait for Brexit. Anyway, Richard, have you one final question?
That would be totally pointless. The reproductive rate of rats is gigantic. The number of young they'll produce is gigantic. They die like flies. None of them last very long. But we'll eliminate nearly all of them, and even there's one or two around, there's going to be as many there again in a...
Yeah, it's the food. Five times a year.
It's the huge litters. Yeah. This goes on. But anyway, to return to the terns away from those horrible rats, the terns, it always seemed to me, were kind of prima donnas sort of thing. Yeah, I live in Malahide. Now, Malahide had all five breeding terns 100 years ago. It has none now. An interesting thing about
those posh people living there instead, well, like you, Richard.
Whether it's with posh people or not, one of the usual explanations put out is that people disturbed them. And being prima donnas, on the verges of nervous breakdowns, they always move out. So they tend to desert places fairly readily, I understand. This is all kind of anecdotal rubbish, you know. It mightn't be true at all. That's why I'm asking you about it, Tara. Are they very temperamental? And if so, is human disturbance a factor in the docky situation?
On Docky, we're actually lucky enough that two of the islands that they breed on, Maiden Rock and Lam Island, they are restricted to the public, so there are no access sanctuaries. So we're really lucky there. Now that they're kind of breeding a little bit more successfully, and they're actually starting to breed in areas that are a little bit closer to where people are moving around on Docky Island, so behind the church, we are a little bit more concerned about dogs on the island, for one thing, but also concerned that maybe people aren't aware that the terns are there and will accidentally disturb them. It's not so much that they're prima donnas, it's kind of inbuilt in them to get up off the nest and mob when people disturb them, which makes them really vulnerable to predation. So, say, like, jackdaws or corvids or gulls are sitting around watching all this going on. They see all the terns go up, they realise, oh, these guys are distracted, great, it's our time to go in. And they go in and steal the eggs and the chicks. And that's kind of the problem with disturbance.
So the gulls,
now, the other donkey factor, seems to be, you mentioned, is the presence of goats and rabbits. Yeah. Now, if I recollect correctly, Mallow, when it was removed from Rockabill to, there was a famous case where they removed all the mallow.
Mallow is a big plant that has purple flowers on it. Yeah.
Now, everyone was worried lest the terns would leave, because apparently the presence of vegetation is a help to the terns. Now, if you have rabbits and goats will devour everything. They leave just a baldy island. Now, are the goats changing the habitat and making it unsuitable for terns?
No, the goats are actually a really important part of Docky Island itself, so the main island. They found 5 rare species of plants out on Docky Island, and they are there because of the presence of goats. Uh-huh. So essentially they are grazing everything down, and it's allowing these like clovers to...
They're removing the competition from grasses and
exactly,
things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're not competing with grasses, and they're able to survive there. And 3 of these clover species are found in 10 other sites in Ireland, I think. So it's actually really important to have the goats there, and to a certain extent a small population of rabbits, but that does need to be controlled.
But do the goats walk on the nests, or are they clumsy in that sense? Or are they afraid of the terns?
I've seen the terns mobbing them a good bit on Docky Island. So on Docky Island, I've seen the goats up in among the terns just on the back of the island, and they didn't do any harm whatsoever until the very end of the season, when there was an egg that had never hatched anyway, was accidentally stood on by a goat. So what we're going to hopefully do is put up some stronger fencing around that area, just to kind of keep them out of that particular area. Yeah. But definitely want goats on the island.
But you're very lucky to have no foxes, because up in Beltray, where there's a protected up at Beltray, they quite often have terrible troubles with foxes, because it's obviously on the mainland there.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that little tern colonies definitely have, because they nest on beaches on the mainland there.
So you got no roseates this year, though?
No roseates this year. We did have them fishing off of the island, which is really good. It means that they are aware of the area at least, so hopefully next year we'll get them. And what we're hoping to do next year is A, continue on with the rat baiting, B, continue on with the gull deterrence, so putting up this grid of canes. It's 1 metre by 1 metre apart, they're at a 90 degree angle, and essentially the idea is that the 3 species of gull that breed on the island, the lesser blackback, the great blackback and the herring gull, they have a wingspan of 1.3 metres up to 1.7 metres, so that's 1.7 metres.
They're huge.
The great blackback gull, which is the biggest gull in the world, it's ginormous and it's amazing, it's a beautiful creature. But basically these large gulls aren't able to fit between the 1 metre by 1 metre grid of canes. Whereas the Arctic tern and the common tern and the rosy tern, hopefully when it comes, they will be, because their wingspan is below 1 metre. So the terns just flit in between the canes, whereas gulls passing overhead, they're not able to get in between and have a quick snack. Basically, the gulls that were already nesting on Lam Island, they nested beside the terns this year. We didn't have any problems with them, really. It's the juveniles, or the ones that didn't breed this year or failed breeders, that are maybe out looking for a snack. Those are the ones that we had a problem with last year.
Now, the community school in Skerries is, to some extent, have to be congratulated on the enormous contribution they made to the roseate terns out on Rockabilly, because because they made these, the woodwork classes made these lovely nest box things, and this increased. Now, could nest boxes like that be put in Dalkey to increase the population? Or would it work? Or are you thinking along those lines?
Yeah, we already have, actually. So the volunteers from the South Dublin Birdwatch Ireland branch did put out these nest boxes on Maiden Rock and on Lamb Island. This year on Dalkey Island, just because the chicks were so kind of vulnerable to predation from gulls, instead of putting out the nest boxes, which are essentially just a box with a hole in them, I put out these long bait stations. So the 75-centimetre tubes that we were using to lay down poison, they got a quick wash and they went out, and the chicks were using them as shelters instead. So the gulls couldn't put their heads in and grab the chicks out of them, and it kept them safe.
So the poison pipes get two uses.
They get two uses, yeah. We're all about recycling.
Are you ringing the gull? Are you ringing the terns? I mean, the chicks, or do you get a chance to do that?
Yeah, they've been ringing the chicks there for a few years now. But this year, again, it was the first ever chicks ringed on Dalkey Island, so they'd never survived long enough on Dalkey Island to be ringed. And in total, I can't remember the exact number of chicks that we ringed, but it was over 20 anyway. And we're hoping that we'll start getting recitings of these birds, that they'll come back. But we actually got a really nice reciting of a common tern that was ringed on Maiden Rock in 2002. And we got a reciting of it feeding its fledged chick in Dublin Port that was ringed by the Dublin Bay Birds Project in Dublin Port. So we now know the exact age of a bird, 17 years of age, that was ringed on Maiden Rock, who is now nesting in Dublin Port and feeding its chick in Dublin Port.
They're
finished. So they haven't actually left Ireland. They're out on Sandymount Strand and different areas around Dublin, off the coast of Dublin. And what they're doing is they're roosting on these beaches.
Well, congratulations to all of the people at Birdwatch Ireland and to all the people who facilitated you. And it's great news, isn't it?
It is.
It really is terrific news. Thank you very much indeed.
Follow us on Facebook, RTE Nature.
Mooney Goes Wild on RTE Radio 1.